Next day, 2.5-hour program on Vietnam. Program is in two parts. First part, Judy Coburn's report on the tiger cages of Con Son, including a description of the prison by Don Luce, who led the U.S. congressional delegation to expose and denounce the conditions there, and that program is from August. That will be followed, after about an hour, by civilian casualties, Bill Schechner's interview with Dr. Herbert Needleman, who is working with the Committee of Responsibility to bring wounded Vietnamese civilians to the United States for treatment. To introduce the first portion of this two-part program, here's Judy Coburn.
Torture and deplorable prison conditions are hardly a new story in Vietnam. They have existed since the French tortured the Viet Minh in the 40s and early 50s and have continued under most of the repressive South Vietnamese regimes. This week, however, for the first time, the Western press finally recognized the story. Four Westerners, two American congressmen, their staff assistant, and Don Luce of the World Council of Churches, managed to find and examine the infamous tiger cages of Con Son Prison Island. The tiger cages which Vietnamese students have insisted existed since the time of President Diem. They were the first Westerners to see the cages since they were built by the French. Don Luce, who spent 10 years in Vietnam for the International Voluntary Service, before going to work for the World Council of Churches, has been interviewing students and writing of torture by the Tu Khi regime for 2 years. Last week, he persuaded two members of a congressional fact-finding team, Representative Augustus Hawkins and Representative William Anderson, to go with him as an interpreter to Con Son Island. Here is his story in an interview with Judy Coburn of Pacifica Radio and Carl Robinson, a young reporter for the Associated Press.
Prison was started in as a French penal colony in 1862. It's become a rather famous prison, a very infamous prison, actually, in terms of the torture which went on. Many of the leadership of North Vietnam came out of Con Son Island. It was once known as Ho Chi Minh, the University of Ho Chi Minh, because after people went in and went through the sort of the torture and that sort of thing at Con Son, they became the leadership and a lot of the fighting people within the Viet Minh. It also developed a reputation as being Devil's Island and this sort of thing. Well, the thing which bothered people most of all was, and which became the worst reputation, were the tiger cages. These were talked about, feared by people. And so that as I have been studying and talking with as many prisoners as I can, one of the things which I found that people have begun to talk about, particularly lately in the last 2 or 3 years, again, are the tiger cages of Con Son.
Tell us about your trip to the prison.
Well, on January 2nd, two congressmen, or before that, a group of congressmen were here, and I took this opportunity to talk with them about the tiger cages at Con Son Island, and out of a group of 12 congressmen, two of them finally agreed that they would go and look into this question. I had spent, as I said, a year and a half looking into the questions of where the tiger cages might be, what we could see, and this sort of thing. We got lists of names of people in the prison. Then at about 8 o'clock in the morning, we left the airport, Tan Son Nhat Airport here in Saigon.
What sort of airplane was provided?
We went in one of these silver two engine, I think they're C-1. The Air America flight. It is a plane which had been provided by the U.S. Embassy. Special soft seats and all. We got onto got onto the plane, received a briefing from the U.S. Top Public Safety Advisor, Frank Walton. The thing which I remember best about this was in response to a question of whether it was an Alcatraz, he said, no, this is more like a Boy Scouts recreational camp. We landed at Kansan. The island itself is sort of shaped like a dish, a saucer kind of thing, with mountains running around the top edge of this saucer. And the district, the town, center, the prison administration, is sort of right in the center of the top of this saucer. We went there, and then they began this sort of job of stalling us. First we talked about the weather coming over, then Colonel Nguyen Van Vey told us, said, well, you know, the Kansan means mountain island, and well, after about 10 or 15 minutes they asked us if we wanted coffee. So one of the congressmen said, yes, we'd like coffee. So in a few more minutes they brought us the coffee, the cafe filtra that goes drip, drip, drip. And they put an extra amount of coffee in so that the drips were farther apart. Well, later then after we talked some more, one of the congressional aides, Tom Harkin, broke this kind of discussion about the weather and the beautiful island and said, could we see some of the prisoners? And the prison director said, well, yes, of course. I can arrange this. You can talk to them. And then Tom said, well, we have a list of six prisoners. We passed him this list, and the whole atmosphere changed. It changed from one of cordiality to one of him seeing us as his adversaries or something like this. He said, you can't just come here and see anybody you want. You couldn't do that in the United States, so you can't do that here. This is a prison. If you want to interview specific people, you have to have the permission from the Ministry of Interior. It was then suggested that a telegram be sent to the Ministry of Interior asking for permission to interview these people, which after some more discussion, the colonel agreed to do. A few minutes later, he went over to his desk. In the process of writing this telegram, his aide asked him about the wording of it, and he then responded in Vietnamese, saying, well, the whether we get an answer is not important.
They didn't realize you spoke Vietnamese, is that right?
That's right. At that time, they didn't realize that I could speak any Vietnamese, although this was the purpose, one of the major purposes in the congressman asking me to go, was that I could speak Vietnamese, and they were afraid that if they had to depend completely on interpreters there, that they would get a snow job. Mr. Walton said, well, let's go over to the curio shop. Because, you know, before you go, you know, to the congressman, before you go back to the United States, you need to have some curios. And he showed the, pointed to the swagger stick of Colonel Vey's and said,
this is WBAI in New York City.
You can get these and other things. Well, Representative Hawkins of the Watts area in Los Angeles said, well, I'd sort of like to see the prisons and so on. Maybe we can go to the curio shop when we come back. So we started out, we visited camp number two. The interesting thing there, I think, more than anything else, was the talking with the prisoners. At first, when they still didn't know that I spoke Vietnamese, I was able to go over and sit down with a couple prisoners and talk an extended talk before anyone came over. And the guy that I talked with the most, basically, well, he said this. He said, I'm a political prisoner from the time of Diem. I have no idea when I will get out of prison. We're not getting enough to eat here. We're not getting medicine here. They were in a dispensary here in the dispensary. And he pointed to a guy who was laying on a bed and very sick and said, you see this guy, and there was a bottle there, you know, for dextrose inside. He said that they just put up this bottle. It was put up for you to see. We have no medicine. We have no vegetables. And then one of the prison guards came up, and he said, and we have plenty of food, and it's not quite like on the mainland, but the people here are very kind. And I found this in the regular prisons over and over again, that if you talked with the prisoners alone, they would complain about the conditions and the problems and so on. Once the guards came over, they would change. Like one guy was talking with him, he said, you know, what are you? He said, I'm a political prisoner. Well, what did you do? I was arrested by the provincial authorities. Then we asked again, well, you know, what specifically? And the colonel was there, and he said, you had a grenade in your hand and you were going to kill people, weren't you? And he repeated, I had a gun in my hand, a grenade in my hand, and I was going to kill people. So that they just parroted what the prison officials said. We were anxious to see camp number four, because this is where we had heard the tiger cages were. So we asked to see camp number four. We're taken to camp number five. We went through camp number five, a very similar kind of tour. When the guards were there, the people would say the, in quotes, proper things, right things, whatever they were told to say. When they weren't, they complained about conditions. Then we asked again to see camp number four. We were taken to camp number four. And after sort of a quick tour inside the regular camp, we had spotted the area, a little path, which was what we believed was the path that led to the tiger cage. There was a sort of a vegetable garden along the side of it. We used this as a way to walk down the path, complimenting the prison warden, Colonel Vey, about introducing some agriculture and vocational training and so on. And then we got to the door, which was a very narrow door, maybe about 2 feet across. And we said, you know, where does this go? And he said, well, it just goes into another camp. Then I said, well, can we go in? And he said, well, no, we have to go around. And at that point, you know, we were remembering what we had been told, and, you know, over through, I was remembering, you know, what I'd been told over this past year and a half about the tiger cages, that there was only one tiny door in which you could get through. And we could see through the door, and we could see an old dilapidated building which had been described to us, and we could see what we thought looked like the tiger cages. So we began to shake the door and rap on the door, at the same time trying to convince the colonel to let us in and to stall for time, saying, one of the representatives saying, well, you know, I'm too tired. Can't you just send someone around and let us in, which the colonel refused. But then somebody came to the door, to this door. They opened it and said, what do you want? We walked through, and there was this long building. Something like a building, you know, for chickens or something like that, a one-story building with a whole series of doors which were barred with no hole or anything in these doors. We saw a stairway going up on top, again, as had been described to us, lead into the, you know, where the tiger cages were. We went up the stairs, and then before us was this whole row, or actually just below us, because as you walked down this sort of alleyway or catway, whatever you want to call it, you would look down on each side of you, and these were what in Vietnamese would be called chung cop, or tiger cage. A tiger cage is about 5 feet across and about 9 feet long, about 8 feet high. It has a very small sort of hole at the top, which is covered with bars. And we looked down through these bars, and below us were three or four male prisoners in this first building that we went to. And they were all pointing to their mouths, with their mouths open, rubbing their stomachs, and sort of making all sorts of motions of pleading. They were pointing to marks on their bodies, which appeared to be torture marks or something like this. Then one of them said, "Donnez-moi de l'eau, give me some water." And I said, "Well, I can't," in Vietnamese, I responded, "I can't speak French, but I can speak Vietnamese. This is an American congressional team that is here to study conditions in the prison camp." And then they all started talking. Each of these pits, whatever you want to call them, people would start speaking to us. "We are thirsty, we are hungry, we are beaten, please help us." And some of them, you know, like one man who was missing three fingers, he said that these three fingers were cut off at the time that I was arrested. He showed us a scar on the back of his head, which he claimed was a result of being hit, and so on, again at the time he was arrested. They said that when they asked for food, that lime was thrown down on them. There was a bucket of lime right beside each of these windows. We asked Colonel Vey, the warden of the camp, you know, "What is this bucket of lime for?" And he said, "Well, it's to whitewash the wall." And the prisoners then started shouting, "No, no, it is thrown on us when we ask for food." And there was lime on the floor of these, of all of these pits or cages.
Was Colonel Vey and the advisors and the congressmen all going traveling along together, or did these people break off, some of them?
When we went into the tiger cage, I saw everyone except Mr. Walton, the chief American advisor to prisons here. I did not see him come up and look into the tiger cages at all while we were there.
Were there any other advisors?
It was, yes, Randolph Berkeley, or Barclay, yeah. Berkeley, who is the top prison advisor, whereas Mr. Walton is the overall top public safety advisor. Mr. Berkeley said that he had heard that the tiger cages existed before. He had never seen them. He appeared, at least to me, to be visibly shooken by the conditions that people were undergoing, whereas Mr. Walton was visibly shooken by the fact that we had got in to see them. Mr. Walton was very upset. He said that you had no right to come in here. The prison warden did not want you to see this. This is a Vietnamese prison. As Americans, you have no right to come here. You know, this is a break in Vietnamese sovereignty. Well, Congressman Hawkins said, "Well, you know, the United States has given a great deal of economic aid to the Vietnamese prisons. As a congressman, I want to know how this aid is being used." And then he went on to say that, you know, he said, you know, there are an awful lot of American boys who are being held as prisoners in North Vietnam, and I hope that the American boys in the North are not being treated in the same way as the prisoners that we have just seen in the tiger cages here. Well, as we talked with the men in the tiger cages or pits, then they started saying, "Well, you should see the other tiger cages. We hear the women screaming right by here, and you must go over there." And they pointed in a direction beyond where we had been. And we went in this direction and found another whole series of tiger cages. Again, 60 to 70 cages or pits, whatever you want to call them. Whereas in the men's pits, there had been three or four prisoners. in every one of the women's pits, there were five women. There were at least there were 300 to 350 women being held in the tiger cages, 150 to 200 men, somewhere around 450 or 500 people in total being held in the tiger cages.
Could you tell how many of them were students, or how many did, what would you say was the ratio of the background of the people there?
The men were young men, but I don't think were generally students. They seemed to be up and around 20, 25, or say around 25 or 30. Of the ones that I asked, they were, some were workers. One was a Buddhist monk who had been in, I believe he said, since 68. I'd have to look at my notes. Very strong person, not physically, but, you know, in terms of his, you know, he, for example, he said, I am a Buddhist monk. I was arrested in, I think it was 1968. I was arrested because I was marching for peace. I am still speaking out for peace, despite the fact that I am not getting enough to eat, we are not getting enough to drink, we are being beaten. Peace is the most important thing to me. In the girls' side, the girls were much younger generally, 15, 16, 17 years old. A lot of them came from Geelong High School, which is one of the most prestigious schools right here in Saigon. There was one very old lady, an old blind woman, which in terms of human interest, one of the younger girls had asked us, can you please go down to the cell where the old blind lady is and tell her that I said hello. And we went down and told her, and you know, they appreciate, you know, there seemed to be a closeness among these people who are living in the cells. There was no sense that we could feel at all of any hate or arguments or anything, even though people are living extremely, you know, close, you know. Five people in a cell 5 feet wide and 8 or 9 feet long is pretty close living quarters when you're never allowed to get out.
Under what charges had this blind woman been?
I don't know what the charges she were under. Most of them were under, you know, they would say, well, I am a political prisoner. And if you asked further, they said, I demonstrated for peace. I didn't ask the blind woman specifically what she was in for.
What did they say specifically about the food and water situation and toilet facilities and that sort
right.
of thing?
About food, the women said that we've been here for 7 months and we have had a vegetable four times in the 7 months that we have been here. They said that the food that we get is very poor quality rice, which has sand and pebbles in it, and some salt. To put on this rice, and that this has been our diet for 7 months, except for the four times that a vegetable, something like this. As far as water was concerned, they just said we don't have enough water to drink. They said they get part of a glass of water twice a day, and they get the rice twice a day. The women complained particularly about lack of water to wash themselves with. They said that we only get about half a cup of water every other day to wash ourselves with. And they said that particularly during the menstruation period, it was very difficult and very unsanitary for them at that time. They had in each tiger cage, there was a sanitary bucket, you know, to go to the bathroom in. And they complained about the fact that it smelled a lot, that it was two things. One is it was only emptied once a day, and secondly, they said that it leaked. And so that, you know, the leakage got onto the floor and this sort of thing. Some of them also said that the guards would urinate or defecate on them through this hole in the bars. They seemed to be an attempt on the part of the guards to destroy their spirits. They were very strong-willed people, very determined, and the guards would keep. They would say. Condition, you know, to us, you know, we're not getting enough food, we're not getting enough water, and the guards would respond, well, then do you agree to salute the flag? And they would respond without exception, no, we will not salute the flag. We will not salute the flag that represents all of the bad things that have been done to us. They were very open in their criticism of Till. They said that Till is just a puppet of the United States. He does not represent the Vietnamese people. With Till here, we can never have peace. At the same time, the people that I talked with, and I was, you know, interpreting for the congressman, so this came up several times, they denied that they were communists. They would say, we are not communists. We are nationalists. We are people who love our country. We are people who have been marching for peace, people who have been working for peace. Ideologies are unimportant to us. The thing that's important to us is peace. And then dependent upon what their backgrounds were for the workers, and that sort of thing, they would just talk about peace and the opportunity to work, you know, without having foreigners around and that sort of thing. There was, several of them talked and said, talked about American policy versus the American people, you know, which is one of the things that you get now with the youth movement here in Saigon. It's also true with the NLF. It's true with any of the middle forces. We oppose American policy. We do not oppose the American people. We know that American policy is not a result of the American people, but only a result of the American government. And then they go on to explain, you know, their reasons and so on.
But you mentioned in other things that you've written about this, that they were shackled. Did the prisoners talk openly about being shackled?
The prisoners said that the shackles had just been taken off a few days before, and they pointed to marks on their legs. They showed where the emplacements, where the bar had been, where they were shackled. The prisoners that have got out of Khon San in May of this year just written a report in which they talk at great length about the shackles. Being forced to lie down, not being able to sit up, and this sort of thing. The clothes, which they were all wearing clothes when I saw them, they claimed that they had also just been given better clothes, that before they'd had very bad clothes, not enough clothes, you know, and this kind of thing. So that they were saying that they had been prepared a little bit just in case we did get in, because it was known that we were coming. Psychological thing that I thought was important was the difference between the attitude of the prisoners in the tiger cages and the prisoners in the other rooms. The other prison, the main prison. There are about 10,000 prisoners. As of June, it was 9,916, about 10,000 prisoners.
Are these are primarily political prisoners?
They are, of the prisoners that I talked with, almost all of them were political prisoners, and almost all of them were there without trial. They said that they had not received a trial. These were people who were under ANTRI, which means that it's a special administrative law of the government, which says that people can be sent to prison for up to 2 years without trial, and this is renewable. This was one of the things that they would come, and if the guards were not there, they would ask us. This was on the outside of the tiger cages. They would ask us if we could help to get them released from this situation of being in jail more than their 2 years, still not being retried. There seemed to be a general feeling among the prisoners that there was no record. They had no idea when they would be let out of prison. It was a kind of hopelessness.